make it stick. The ball was protected, and we could get up the pitch, or have a breather, or win a free kick. You had options. The next day, I went and spoke to my staff. I've seen a player, Stern John. We've got to get him. He'll give us something different. One of the staff said, his knees are gone. I said, look at his record. He rarely missed a game. He played 40 games a year. He failed his medical, but I said to Peter Walker, do the deal. I'd looked at Stern's playing record, and the fee we were paying for him was small. It wasn't a massive investment. And who was going to question me? We were winning matches. Everything was going well. We signed him. I knew he'd be a man, and he was one of the best men I've come across. I knew he could deal with coming up to Sunderland. I knew he wouldn't be coming into my office with, can I have a day off next week because my wife needs a scan? I knew I wouldn't have to babysit him. A year or so later, I was after Kenwyn Jones, and I told Stern, I don't want to sell you, but I'm trying to get Kenwyn Jones in Southampton want you as part of the deal. He said, okay, I'll go for it. He stood up and shook my hand. Thanks for everything. And I went, that's why he signed you. A man. He was brilliant. Danny Simpson came in on loan from United, a right back. He helped us get promoted. He got us up the pitch. Himself and Carlos played on the right too, and they struck up a good relationship. We now had plenty of strength and pace down that side. Danny was a likeable lad, and he brought United qualities with him. But he was no angel. He had an edge to him. We had a good mix of players. With Yorkie, Carlos and Stern from Trinidad. With the Irish lads. With a couple of local lads. Grant Ledbetter and a few other young lads in the background coming up. Jordan Henderson, Martin Waghorn, Jack Colback. It was a really good mix. Lads who got on well together. It helped that we were winning football matches. Everything seemed great when you were winning. Our next game was a 0-0 draw at home to Crystal Palace. We didn't win, but we kept a clean sheet. I was happy with that, and I let the players know it. I'd made Dean Whitehead our new captain. The previous captain, Stephen Caldwell, moved on to Burnley just before the transfer deadline. Dean's fitness levels were very good. He was never injured, and I could rely on him. I liked him. He was captain of the team, but possibly Yorkie was the unofficial leader. We beat Coventry at home 2-0. Yorkie and Carlos scored. Then the same score away to Plymouth, Dave and Stokesy. Ian Holloway was managing Plymouth. I didn't get a real chance to celebrate the victory because Ian pulled me into a meeting to tell me all about the problems he was having getting training facilities. I was thinking, I don't give a shit about your training facilities. I just want a game of football. We beat Southend United 4-0 at home. Dave, Tobias Heisen and Stern got two. When I look back at it now, I think the signings I made that season are even better than I thought at the time. The crowds were unbelievable. It made me feel I definitely made the right decision coming to Sunderland. We were winning, and the crowds were steadily getting bigger. We'd gone from 14,000 to eventually 42,000. Where did the 27 extra thousand come from? I don't think we were doing anything amazing. We were winning. We were up to sixth. The championship is relentless. You don't get a breather. But I'd like to think there was fun. It's horrible, I suppose. But when you win, you think, we'll have to win next week. Or in a few days, if there's a midweek game. And if you lose, you go, it's going to be a long week. I've spoken to experienced managers. Some of them enjoy Monday to Friday, but dread Saturday. I was the opposite. I wasn't mad about Monday to Friday, but I loved Saturday. I felt a bit like a boxer. The sparring is all well and good, but it's all about the fights. But a good boxer has to spar, and a good team has to train properly. I didn't like it if we got beaten. There's pain coming today, or if we had injuries. But I thought that that was where I'd be judged, on the pitch, on match day. I'd enjoyed watching reserve games during the week, or DVDs of the opposition. but I found some of the duties, like writing program notes for the next home match, a bit mundane. A bit of a nuisance. I couldn't wait for the next game. That changed later on. Football will always kick you into bollocks. But with this group of players, I knew what I was going to get. We'd have briefings on Monday mornings, and plenty of banter. Do you know what? We did have a lot of fun. This was on the back of winning matches. We socialised a lot, three or four of us going into Durham for a bite to eat. The staff and myself were quite competitive, so we do a lot of gym work together, or go-karting. There's an outdoor circuit near Sunderland. It's brilliant. I think the go-karting was the highlight of the week for some of the staff, not what happened on Saturday. We were going well, but there were always issues. Things were never too rosy. Tobias Heisen told me that he was homesick. He wanted to go back to Sweden. And there were things I was still trying to get used to. Not dramatic moments, just aspects of the job. We were trying to move some players. We had too many that we didn't need. I'd be praying for a phone call from another club. I found that frustrating, the waiting. Staff would come to me, asking, say, for time off because of marital difficulties or problems with their children. I think that was one of my strengths. I think I had a kindness to me. But there was never a day when I'd go into work and come out later in the same mood. There'd always be something going on. I'd get letters now and again from supporters telling me that some of the players had been out drinking, the standard stuff. It was always the Irish lads, always. I never got a letter about the English lads out drinking late. Graham Kavanagh and Stokesy got into trouble one night. There'd been a fight. I think it was Stokesy who said, "Gaffer, it wasn't me. I was only backing him up." I think Cav had headbutted someone. I'd say, "No, lads, watch yourselves." I wasn't their parent. I think some managers go too far trying to be the father figure. When the players came into my office, I didn't come down on them all the big I am. I'd go, "Lads, what are you doing? Just be careful." I'd try to be more like a friend, maybe a big brother, because I'd been there myself, and people will want to get you into trouble. Ferguson used to call me in and say, "I found out you were in a bar last week." And I'd say, "Yeah, I was. You left at 2:30 in the morning." "Yeah? Was it 2:30? I would go out on a Sunday night, even if we played on a Wednesday, or I'd drink on Wednesday night with the game the following Saturday. But I'd never drink 2 nights before a game, whatever day the game might fall on. It's not ideal to be drinking even 3 days before a game, but at the time, I felt I could manage it. It was a standard clause in the contract that you couldn't go out 2 nights before a game, so I wasn't breaking any rules. "You got a taxi at 2:30 this morning in Sale." "Yeah? What were you doing there?" "I was drinking." We were sixth in a playoff position, but I wasn't going overboard. I stayed in the role, kept up the moody image. We didn't want the players thinking we could relax or settle for a place in the playoffs. We had 3 games coming up in the space of 11 days against teams that were above us. These were going to be massive games for us. The first was against Birmingham, managed by my old friend Steve Bruce. We drew 1-1. Carlos Edwards scored the goal, lashed it in with his left foot, almost a trademark Carlos goal. He was scoring some great goals. Birmingham were ahead of us in the table, so I was happy enough with the result. I've always had good battles against Brucey, when he was with Birmingham and later Wigan. He's a good key to learning how to manage upwards, how to manage the owners and chief executives. He was at Birmingham when Gold and Sullivan were the owners, and he got on well with them. Brucey always had a nice way about him, whoever was in his office. He got on well with Dave Whelan when he was managing at Wigan. Now he's at Hull, with the owner who wants to change the name to Hull Tigers, and Brucey defends his point of view. He seems to work with difficult people, but he manages it well. During my pro licence, one of the things I was told was that the key to managerial longevity wasn't managing downwards, but managing the people above you. I admire the way Brucey has done it. Next, we had Derby at home. At the press conference the day before the game, I said, mentally, some teams at the top of the table would lose the plot. I was playing games. That's what you do, especially against the teams ahead of you. We were in a good position, nowhere near the top yet. It was like a horse race. Don't get to the front too early. We were coming up slowly, and the teams higher up the table had been watching us for months. Now we were coming up against the Derbys and the Birminghams, managers like Billy Davis and Brucey, men with huge experience. Sometimes I had to throw a couple of hand grenades. If we were beaten, nobody would think much of my quote, or even remember it. If we won, oh, the mind games. And we won. Liam Miller's header. The smallest man on the pitch. That was when the crowd really took off. The staff were jumping around. The subs were out on the pitch, and I thought, there's something happening here. I won manager of the month. But I wasn't sure about the point of these awards, and I've always felt that way. I won awards as a player, the Sports Writers Player of the Year, the PFA Player of the Year, Player of the Year in Ireland. I was at the award ceremonies, and I'd be praying that I wouldn't win. I hated putting myself out there in that way, going up to collect it. There was a shyness involved in it. I didn't want to go up. But I love football as a team game, and it gets my back up when I see players and even managers being presented as more important than they actually are. A lot of the awards are about publicity for the sponsors. I won Manager of the Month in February 2007. What good was it to me a few years later? Don't get too carried away, because you're up for a fall. I said at the time that I put the award in the garage, and I did. We beat West Brom 2-1 away. Yorkie and Stern scored. They were brilliant. It was a great result for us. But afterwards, there was a bit of trouble in the dressing room. Near the end of the game, only a few minutes to go, Stokesy had gone through. He gave a bad ball away and West Brom broken us. They didn't score, but a lot of the players were still angry with Stokesy and having a proper go at him when I went into the dressing room. They went berserk, defending him. Defending a young player who was being bullied. We'd won the game and he'd made a mistake. When I'd lost my temper after the Sheffield Wednesday game, it had been a football matter. We'd nearly thrown the game away. But this time was different. He was 18 or 19, a kid. They were all shouting at him aggressively, senior players. I think my exact words were, give him a fucking break. Then I found out that Tony Mowbray, the West Brom manager, had been talking crap after the game, as managers do. He was going, we were the better team and if we keep playing like that, we'll be all right. We played better than Sunderland. I felt he was quite dismissive of us. And me. I was annoyed about that. Because we deserved to win. We'd played well. Those three results in a row, the draw against Birmingham and the wins against Derby and West Brom, we were taken off. I remember thinking, my God, we might actually go up. The next game was away to Barnsley, and three players missed the bus. Stokesy, Tobias Heisen, and Martin Fullop. We'd waited for them at the station in Middlesbrough, where we'd arranged for all the players to meet us. They rang us. We're stuck in traffic. I said, well, we can't wait any longer. We're off. I left them behind. We'll get another few players down. I didn't shout down the phone or anything. I understood. They were stuck in traffic. But that was no good to us. So we left without them. That was another message I was sending out. Lateness was an issue at the club. Bad habits. Football is about good habits. It's not about always doing something extraordinary. It's about doing the ordinary things well. We went to Barnsley and we won 2-0. Dave Connolly and Grant Leadbitter. It was a massive game for us. We took 8,000 fans with us and the place was rocking. Absolutely brilliant. The news about the players we'd left behind was going around the fans and Niall was on the radio. We'll stand for no nonsense. It was a bit hard on the players. I didn't want them to be scapegoated, but it was almost natural that they would be. They'd been late, but a good bit late. We'd waited. I'd given them a chance. After the game, at the press conference, I said that I was trying to change the mentality at Sunderland. The idea that it was a yo-yo club, that it was acceptable to be late for training or that you didn't have to train hard all the time or that you could get 2 or 3 weeks out of a week-long injury. That was a message for everybody. The players, the staff, the fans, Niall, the board, everybody. It was nice to be able to deliver these good messages on the back of victories. The Barnsley three were at the training ground early enough on Monday morning to bring in the milk. I called them in early for a meeting, but only so we could get it out of the way and they could go out to training. They came to my office together, like they were coming to see the headmaster, which I didn't like. I said, "Look, lads, you're out of order, but it was no big deal. You're not going to be made to suffer any more. You'll all be training with the first team." I didn't find them. I take a stance, then say, "It's over." I wanted the lads to know that we were going places, and they were still part of it. I wanted them to look at me like I'd looked at Ferguson and think, "Well, that's fair." Regarding more personal matters, I could have hang-ups for years, but when it came to players, I had to be a bit more selfish. I knew I needed them. We drew with Stoke at home, 2-2. We were 2-1 down, then Daryl Murphy scored in injury time. We were poor. Everyone had thought that we could beat Stoke, even though Stoke had beaten us early in the season. But Stoke were decent. Murph scored, and I said to myself, "That's a massive point." After the game, I came into the dressing room. Everyone was flat. The players, even the staff. I got annoyed with my staff that night. 2-1 in injury time, and we still drew. They're the points that get you up. Never give up. We beat Hull at home, 2-0. Johnny Evans and Stern. Then we won at Cardiff. Big result. Ross Wallace scored with a free kick. Johnny was a big player for us. His leadership and his ability to read the game. He was a tough boy. The championship is full of men who've been around the block. But Johnny was only just a kid. I liked everything about Johnny. That was the night Niall organised all the taxis for the fans who were stranded at Bristol Airport. Later, I announced that I was hiring a private detective to dig up some dirt on Niall, that no one could be that good. I'm still working on it. Since the new year, we'd had 11 wins and 3 draws. Our next game was at home to Wolves. I thought, this'll be a good test for us. It would be a measure of our progress, a little benchmark. Wolves were doing well too. It was April now, and there were 6 games left to the end of the season. I knew some of the players would be nervous. Yorkie had just had his Lamborghini shipped over from Sydney and he brought it into the training ground. A white Lamborghini and Sunderland does stick out a little bit. I was looking out of my office window and Yorkie was pulling up outside, and all the lads, the players, were looking at his wheels. It was perfect. They were focusing on Yorkie's Lamborghini, and the game against Wolves was the last thing on their minds. The next day we went out and beat them. We won 2-1. Daryl Murphy scored for us. A rocket. After the game, Mick McCarthy said that we'd definitely be promoted. He was playing games with us, the way I'd done with Derby, putting the pressure on the other team. The rumour on the street was that we were doing something extraordinary. My training apparently was legendary. But we were just doing what I'd done for years. But we were doing it properly. We trained properly and we travelled properly. I made the lads wear a shirt and tie when they went anywhere. This is vital. We trained our fucking socks off. I always say, you train how you play, with intensity. We always had a game at the end of the session. Not just a few stretches and a little kick about. If it was a draw, the lads played until there was a winner, even if it went on for hours. There had to be something at the end of training. There had to be a winner or a loser and punishment for the losers, press-ups or collecting the balls and cones. We were creating a spirit among them. There were bust-ups and fisticuffs, but nice fisticuffs. It wasn't nasty. It was enthusiasm. The players were hungry. They all wanted to be in the starting 11. I'd go to the staff. Let them get on with it. Don't get involved. Winners and losers. Grown men playing like they were kids in the street. There were no draws in street football. We can't play anymore. It's too dark. When I was a kid, we played till midnight until there was a result. Even then, we go for 5 more minutes. never mind blood levels and muscle tears. I'd be told that it was going on too long. It's 12:30. We started at 10. The sports scientist will tell you it was all wrong and that everything should be done by the watch. And I understand that, too. I'm interested in sports science. But I'm also old school. If we didn't have a midweek game, we'd give them Sunday or Monday off. Tuesday would be hard, a tough session. Then Wednesdays would be off. We'd mix it up the odd time. There wouldn't be that much training at this stage of the season, towards the end, because of the number of games we were playing. It was all about games and recovery. We kept it simple because we were winning matches. Southampton away, a brilliant game. We won 2-1 with a couple of great goals. Grant Lidbitter scored one of them. He was a top player for us. He was a good goal scorer and very rarely injured. A good local lad. He had a nice way about him. He could go off on a rant in the dressing room and it was very hard to understand him. It was a standing joke among the staff when Grant went off on one, leave him. He was a good leader. I don't think I ever had a conversation with the players or a member of staff about promotion. But I did have the odd glimpse at my contract to see what the bonus was. We just kept winning, and the league table took care of itself. The table never lies. It was one of my strengths as a player. Just try and win your next match and everything else will fall into place. That was always my attitude. We beat QPR at home, 2-1 again. Dean Whitehead, and another great goal from Grant. I think I praised Nyron Nosworthy after the game because of his attitude. I said it summed up the attitude of the whole team. Nyron was a really good player for us, a nice lad. I had an incident with him earlier in the season. He was late for training, but he lived about 2 minutes from the training ground. I called him into my office. Any excuse he gave me? He told the truth. I slept it out. I said, thanks for telling me the truth. They didn't even find him. We had 3 games left. We went mountain biking in Cumbria. It was great, but a bit mad. I began to wonder if it was a bit too mad. We were on the bikes for 6 or 7 hours. A competition was organised for us, 2 or 3 teams. I remember having a go at one of my team because he had a puncture. We were shattered after it, fucked. I made a game in a couple of days against Colchester. We were building up team spirit and camaraderie. It was brilliant. We went to Colchester and we lost 3-1. We cycled to Colchester. The players still had sore arses from the biking in Cumbria. There was a lesson in the result. We got back to 1-1 and a draw wouldn't have been bad. But we were on a run, so I thought. Fucking go for it. We just kept going. Which had helped us in other games, but not this one. If we'd drawn at Colchester, we could have been promoted in the next game, at home to Burnley. And that would have been brilliant. In front of our fans. Burnley came to the Stadium of Light on the 27th of April. A Friday night game. It was our friend Steve Cotterill again. Steve had worked at Sunderland as Howard Wilkinson's assistant and his time there hadn't gone well. So we knew there'd be extra edge to the game. But we won 3-2. Murph, Dave and Carlos scored. Another of Carlos's typical goals. That was our last home game. We ended up being promoted that weekend, but we didn't know it yet, because the other teams still in contention were playing on Saturday and Sunday. I was walking my dogs on Sunday afternoon when the news came through that Derby slipped up. They'd lost to Crystal Palace. Someone at the club texted me. I was buzzing. I went home and double-checked my contract. It was great, but I would have enjoyed it a lot more if it had happened just after the match, especially at the Stadium of Light. I'd no one to celebrate with. My wife and kids were delighted, but they weren't the staff. They hadn't worked with me. So it was a bit of an anti-climax, sadly. The text started coming in. Well done, Gaffer. One of the staff texted from Sunderland. We're all out. But I was in Manchester. And I was glad in a way. I didn't want to be in a pub all night with my staff. I think the manager should keep a distance. I had to leave Danny Simpson out of the side for the last game of the season. The players, no doubt, had been celebrating promotion after Derby had lost, and Danny turned up late for one of the training sessions. He pleaded with me to let him play. It was very emotional, but I wouldn't let him play. The point, The message to the players was, there's no relaxing. I want to beat Luton. Your season wasn't over. We went to Luton on the last day of the season. The challenge now was if we won, we might win the league. And we did win. 5-0. Another rocket from Murph. He lashed it in. All the final games of the season were being played at the same time. Birmingham slipped up. They lost to Preston. And that got us to the top. We were champions. Promotion had been great. And winning the championship was the icing on the cake. It had been a brilliant journey for us all. But they wouldn't give us the trophy that day on the pitch. And that pissed me off a bit. They said it was for security reasons, because we weren't at our own ground. Lifting the trophy in front of the fans. It didn't matter if it was a replica. Would have been great. And the place was bouncing with Sunderland fans. There are great pictures of some of the players. Nyron and Carlos mixing with the fans, wearing silly hats, hanging off the crossbar. I went to the dressing room and did my usual thing. Played it down a bit. Deep down there was satisfaction, but I was too blasé about it. Everyone was jumping around, singing. There was champagne. I was like, this is what I'd expect. I wish I'd let myself enjoy it a little bit more. But I was always afraid to enjoy success in case I got too carried away. I was keeping myself on my toes. Don't get too grand. But if you can't enjoy winning, there's something wrong, isn't there? We were given the trophy and medals a couple of nights later, in a hotel. I gave my medal to one of the lads who hadn't played enough games to qualify. I think it was Martin Fullop, one of our keepers. During that week before the Luton game, I knew the players would be planning a celebration once the last game was over. As an incentive, I offered them $5,000 to go and enjoy themselves, if they beat Luton and won the championship. That night, during the reception, Yorkie approached and asked if I'd also pay for a coach and a hotel for the players. That pissed me right off. I was giving them $5,000, and they'd have been on good bonuses for winning promotion. I found out that Danny Simpson and Johnny Evans, because they were loan players, weren't entitled to bonuses. But I made sure they got them. You've never seen happier young lads. And I think it helped the following season, when I went to sign Johnny again on loan. I was getting £1 million bonus, and then a big pay rise because we were now in the Premiership. The financial rewards were great, but it was more about the town. There was a plan for us to go on an open-top bus through Sunderland. Niall rang me and I said, no, I'd be ashamed of me life. I think it's right to celebrate achievements. But to celebrate promotion a year after we'd been relegated, it was too much. It wasn't as if we were a small club being promoted for the first time in 20 years. I look back now and I understand that it would have been more for the supporters, and maybe the players and their families. I hope that my decision not to have the bus wasn't arrogance, because I won things with United and Celtic. Some of the players said, this is the first medal I've ever had. Maybe I should have been more open to their point of view, but the open-top bus didn't appeal to me. Most of the players would have been late anyway, and it would have been fucking freezing. I have other regrets, but not that one. There was a meeting of all the medical staff, a debriefing at the end of the season, and they told me that they were getting a lot of injuries on Tuesdays. The players were training too long. We weren't performing well in terms of muscle injuries. I said, okay, yeah, I get it, lads. But just to remind you, we have been promoted. We'd scored a bucket load of late goals. And that was why. Because of the way we trained. I'd take a few injuries in exchange for those goals. The players ran and ran and ran. There'd be an element of my own character in there. You keep going. The crowd helped there too. Credit to the fans. I remember thinking, the work starts now. We're up with the big boys. I'd be starting my first pre-season at the club. I'd have to go to the consortium for more money. I'd have to get some players in. How would I get good players to come to Sunderland? The connection with Ireland, the number of people we had coming across to watch us, was amazing. There was myself, Niall, the consortium, the Irish players. I liked working with other Irish people around me. I always liked the way the consortium lads spoke to me. It was very Irish. Great fucking result. I enjoy it. It plugged into it. There are Irish traits I think we need to move away from. But not that hospitality and support. Fucking good on you. I said I needed a goalkeeper. Is there no fucking goalkeeper we can get in from the youth team? Ah, now lads. At the same time, they were clever business people. And I bet they couldn't believe what was going on. It was a proper journey for them. The Premiership was going to be different. As much as these men were successful, the Premiership was about the Russians and the Sheikhs and the Yanks. We'd be shopping in a different shop. Up to now, we hadn't been buying where Manchester United go to buy. People often say that the Championship is one of the toughest leagues in the world. I won it as a manager. I have to say that. No one else ever does. 8. The disappointments are remembered more than the highs. They're what spur you on, because they hurt. I enjoyed the victories, but took them with a pinch of salt, especially in the Premiership. You're always going, God, look who we got next week. Then it changed. Fuck the draws, let's go and win. We lost a lot, but we won a few we wouldn't have expected to win. We didn't have many draws. They're actually vital. The attitude was all or nothing. But it worked. I appreciate that it doesn't always work. But I wasn't thinking that way. It was, let's go for it. Even when we were 4-0 down at home to United, I was thinking, let's have a go at them. I knew the players' strength, and the fans wouldn't have wanted us to be defensive. From a tactical point of view, we should probably have been more cautious. But what had got us promoted, and what gave us a bit of early success, was having a go. You need a feel for your club, and Sunderland was all about having a go. Sunderland really did suit my personality at that time. I was up for it, and full of energy, and I felt that the Sunderland fans were right behind me. Getting players in was the most important part of our preparation for the Premiership. But there were other issues too. Where could we improve? Could we travel better? Do we fly to more matches and stay in better hotels? We were going to London now, and Manchester, and Liverpool. The year before we'd been going to Colchester and Southend. It wasn't arrogance. It was a fact. We'd be travelling to big cities. Could we get better medical care? Did we change the bonus schemes for staff? Would we want better training kits? The whole club improves. The badge on your kit is now Premiership. The whole package. The excitement of the supporters when the fixtures were published. Tottenham, Liverpool, United in the first 5 matches. Then we'd be playing Newcastle, the Derby. People had told me about it. Oh, the Derby up there. It didn't disappoint. It was the best Derby I've ever been involved in. Up there with Celtic and Rangers. And we'd be going to Middlesbrough too, another Derby. As a player, I'd had plenty of experience of the grounds we'd be visiting and of the quality we'd be playing against. I'd only retired the year before. And we'd some players with similar experience, like Dwight York and Kieran Richardson. The important thing was not to be intimidated or worried about the occasion or even overwhelmed. Expectations were higher now, and the players would have to live with them. You wouldn't hear the Sunderland fans saying, as long as we stay up. They'd have their targets. Once we beat fucking Newcastle, or we have to beat this team. The players had to realise that they deserved to be where they were, and not to be overawed. Our first game was at home to Tottenham, live on Sky. We won. 1-0. Brilliant. Michael Chopra scored in injury time. A newly promoted team really does need a decent start. You need pints. If you fall behind in your pints per game's figure, 1 pint a game, it's a fucker. But straight away, we had 3 pints from just 1 game. We drew at Birmingham midweek, so now we'd 4 pints from 2 games. What's the fuss? What's everyone frightened of? This was great. Then we go to Wigan. Fucking Wigan. And they turn us over 3-0. That's what it's about. Wigan bullied us. They were big and strong. Heskey was up front and Kirkland in goal. These were England players. Then there was Liverpool, then United. Now we had 4 points from 5 games. Then we beat Reading, 7 points from 6. We went to Middlesbrough and drew, 8 points from 7 games. Blackburn, we were robbed, 8 points from 8. Not too bad. I'd have taken that. Then we lose to Arsenal, then West Ham, 8 from 10. We draw with Fulham, 9 points from 11 games. Now we were chasing our tail. We'd played Birmingham the previous season in the Championship, but this time, our second game in the Premiership, we'd only 4 players starting of the 11 who'd played for us the year before. It's hard to let lads go when they've done well for you, but it's the game. Characters get you promoted, but you need more than characters in the Premiership. You need skill, talent, pace, luck. Immediately after we were promoted, I was thinking about new players. Even while we were celebrating in the dressing room. That's the hard side of life for many footballers. It was sad, and I wondered how I was going to tell them. But then, it's the business, and I wondered if I could get good money for them. I'd have to speak to their agents. Hopefully there'd be takers for them. It was no good deciding that, say, 3 players wouldn't be staying if no other clubs actually wanted them. It seems brutal, but they've been part of a promotion team, so it almost guarantees them a good move. It's one of the hardest parts of management, shifting players. I had 5 or 6 weeks off, but I was still making and taking phone calls. In some ways, holidays are a nightmare for a manager. I made the mistake, and I made the same mistake the following year. I was all summer making phone calls. It was pointless, because everybody was away anyway. Agents, chief executives, medical staff, right across football, they're all away. I never got a deal done during the summer. I should have left the phone off and checked in now and then. I've read since that Arsene Wenger switches his mobile off when he's on holiday and just turns it on for an hour in the evenings. I wish I'd had that wisdom or common sense at the time. I was thinking I'd better be proactive, I'd better be busy. I should have been thinking about the quality of the calls, not the quantity. It was an experience. I wanted to be keen, and I wanted to do well. Oh, if we don't sign this player in July, he could be gone. I had a list of players, lads playing in the Premiership, that I gave to Niall when we were promoted. I thought it would be easy, but it wasn't. They wanted too much money, but we weren't giving out mega money. We'd made progress, but we couldn't go from one extreme to another. We didn't want to go the way of Leeds or later Portsmouth, and Sunderland had been in difficulty until the Irish consortium took over. The top player at Sunderland was on less than 20 grand a week. It was decent, but a lot of players were looking for 40 or 60. So I had to start accepting that we weren't going to get the players I thought we would. We got permission to speak to David Nugent. He was at Preston and I'd seen him against us the previous season. He was a decent player, although not a massive goal scorer. I met him at my house in Manchester with his agent. I thought the house was a better option. It was formal. We'd agreed a fee. I think it was 4 million. So he's, yeah, big decision for me, thinking it over. Fine, no problem. I was doing my pro license at the time, and on my way back home a few weeks later, I got a call from David Nugent's agent. He's undecided. Harry's in for him at Portsmouth. This was Harry Redknapp. So I said there was no pressure, but it was only a couple of weeks before the start of pre-season, and there'd come a point when we'd have to make our minds up. I had to bring it to a head another few weeks later. This was David Nugent, by the way. He hadn't become Messi. But he was a good player, and we wanted him. So I rang his agent. Well, he said, Harry's in for him. I went, yeah, I'm aware of that. but we've been in for him for 3 or 4 weeks. And he said, just to put you in the picture, Harry's away this weekend on his wedding anniversary. He's been married for 40 or 50 years and he wants to speak to David when he gets back. I said, I tell you what, I've waited 3 or 4 weeks and now you're asking me to wait because of Harry Redknapp's wedding anniversary? We're pulling out of the deal. The joys of management. We got Greg Halford from Reading. I shouldn't have signed him. He came in for about 2.5 million. A decent fee for a fullback. Reading had bought him from Colchester, but he'd hardly kicked a ball for them. Not a good sign. But it was a sign I ignored, thinking I'd be different. It was a young manager's outlook. You think, I'll be down with it. You've been playing until recently, so you look at players as a player looks at players, not as a manager. The older you get, you realise that the lads who bring baggage everywhere. So you can't be bothered with them, unless they're brilliant. Greg had done well for Colchester against us. He was a talented boy. I should have gone with my gut feeling. He came into my office in Sunderland, and I didn't like the way he sat down. He was crouched down, too laid back. And he asked me a few questions. Who else are you buying? I should have been asking him the questions. 6 months earlier, he was at Colchester. He should have walked up to Sunderland. I should have sent him on his way. But we signed him. We'd agreed the fee and the wages. It's common practice. Everything is agreed before the player actually comes to the club to meet you. The player and his agent have the cards. Brian Clough would never agree a deal until he'd met the player. We're not having you. Players did have agents back then, but Brian Clough wouldn't have tolerated them. He managed at a time before players' agents had the power they have now. We were newly promoted and Sunderland was a bit remote. We had to dangle carrots for people. I didn't like him after that. I thought, not for me. But I signed him. I was finding out slowly that certain players suit certain clubs. And Greg Halford wasn't a Sunderland player. Sunderland people are hard working, roll your sleeves up. I appreciate that even more since I left. And Greg wasn't that type of player. He wasn't a roll your sleeves up, work your socks off player. He was about dealing with the ball, coasting through the game, and just doing enough. He's had a decent career. I saw him at Forest recently and he played okay. When I first discussed players with Niall, we were going down the list. But the lads we were after wanted bigger money or they wouldn't come up to Sunderland. So we moved on to players like Greg Halford. We needed a bigger and better squad. We needed more numbers. There'd be more demands, more injuries. The games would be physically more demanding, more intense. You also need a big squad for training numbers. I was hoping that Greg was better than what we already had. In particular, we needed another defender, a right back. We wouldn't be getting players from Chelsea or United. That might come later on. Trying to get good players in became very frustrating. The wise thing to do is to step back from it a bit. And this is where you need a good chief executive. I had that at Sunderland. Peter Walker. He got deals done. And Niall. Everything was, and this is a big word for me, transparent. Roy, it's not going to happen. He's asking for 60 grand a week. Forget about him. Move on. We were after Darren Bent. Roy, they want 16 million. We can't go to that. Okay, let's move on. I still think that if we bought Darren Bent then, at the start of the 07-08 season, I'd still be the Sunderland manager. He'd have got the goals. But it was too much money. They bought him later, after I'd left, because they'd had another year in a premiership, so they had more money to spend. The longer the club stays in the premiership, the bigger an attraction it is to players, and the club can start to afford the higher wages. There was one lad who didn't even get back to us. The word shopping was used. His wife wanted to live in London. There was another lad, Matt Taylor. I showed him the Stadium of Light, brought him to the boardroom. He told me he had other clubs interested in him. I walked him to his car, told him to take his time with the decision. I was walking to my own car when I got a text from Matt Taylor. I could see him. Still in the car park, driving out. I've decided to sign for somebody else. He'd been telling me 15 seconds earlier that he was unsure about what to do. He went to Bolton. On the other hand, I met Leighton Baines at a hotel in Sunderland. He was leaving Wigan. We'd made an offer and it had been accepted. The first thing he said to me was, "Right, if Everton come looking for me, I'll be moving to Everton because I'm an Evertonian." And I went, "Okay." I appreciated it. We bought Kieran Richardson from United. He was a good signing, but was tricky. I had to meet his dad a few times. Kieran was making a few demands. He wanted a certain jersey number. He wanted to take the penalties. His ego had to be stroked a bit. He did well for us and scored the winner against Newcastle the following season, so he'll always be remembered for that. Craig Gordon was the big name. He came in from Hearts for massive money, 9 million, a record for a goalkeeper at the time. Craig was the only player I've seen being applauded off the training pitch in all my career by his own teammates. It was after his first training session. Nobody could score against him, and it being his first session, we were all watching. We needed a number one goalkeeper. We were in the Premiership. Aim high. He was amazing. Brian Clough bought Peter Shilton for big money and said that Shilton had saved Forrest 12 points a season. Clements, Schmeichel, Shilton, top teams have top goalkeepers. I think I underestimated the importance of keepers when I was a player. It wasn't that I took them, Schmeichel or Packy Bonner, for granted. But I expected them to make big saves. But then, when you're not working with a top keeper, fucking hell, you appreciate them a bit more. Kenwyn Jones came in from Southampton for 6 million, and they got Stern John as part of the deal. Kenwyn did brilliantly for me, and he hasn't done much for other managers since. I think the fact that Dwight York and Carlos Edwards, lads from Trinidad, were already there helped Kenwyn to settle in. Danny Higginbottom came in from Stoke. He could play left-back or centre-back. Tony Pulis gave me all the crap. Oh, he's my best player. All the silly games, trying to get the fee up. But we eventually got Danny. He could score from set-pieces too. He had a good leap. He got a couple of important goals for us. Michael Chopra came in. The fact that he was a Geordie was an issue for some, but not for me. He did a job. We got a good year out of him. We paid 5.5 million, and he scored me 7 goals. That's the madness of Premiership football. 1 million a goal. But his goals kept us up. That was what we paid for. A player worth 15 million, who might have got us more goals, wouldn't have come to us in our first season up. We were learning that quickly. I say the players we wanted. It's not Australia, but Sunderland is pretty bleak. So was Newcastle, but they were in a position to pay a lot more than us. I'm a footballing man. I didn't really care where I was. But others look at the whole package. Will you come up to Sunderland? Yeah, yeah. The wages are decent, but they're not mega. Well, I'm not coming up. They wanted compensation for the cold and dark nights. We knew that the lads who were coming to us were doing it for the right reasons. And Sunderland was the place to be. The crowds, 44,000 and more, the fans were brilliant. The club ran so smoothly at times, I wonder if I'm remembering it accurately. We hear so much now about interference in team selection and so on. But we had it perfect. Everyone knew their role. I was looking after the football. Niall was looking after the PR and the finances. The chief executive was getting deals done. The medical staff were on top of their job. The players were happy to be playing for Sunderland. Niall knew the game, and he just let me get on with it. There wasn't just one owner, no one person claiming control. The fact that we got out of the Championship in my first season meant, I think, that I'd the real support of everybody, and I felt it. We were beaten by Luton in the Carling Cup. It was a bit of a shock because we'd beaten them 5-0 only a few months before. I'd made a mistake. Squad rotation. Squad rotation is fine if you're replacing players with international players like at United or Chelsea. But we weren't doing that. Also, I overdid it. four or five changes instead of one or two. I thought, going to Luton, they could make the changes. But it only works if you win. And we didn't. So it backfired on me. But I hadn't learnt the lesson yet. Luton didn't just beat us. They hammered us 3-0. Their manager, Kevin Blackwell, said that they'd been after revenge, which is fair enough. But that game decided a lot of players' futures. I played some fringe players to give them a chance. You realise that they're fringe players because you don't really trust or believe in them. Greg Halford didn't exactly warm himself to me when he got sent off in the second half. I remember after the game, I wanted to smash my fist against the dressing room wall. I think it's the only time I'd ever felt that. Clive Clark, one of our players who was out on loan to Leicester, suffered a heart attack that night. The news came through to us after the game. The madness of football. We'd been beaten 3-0 by Luton. A shocking result. But at the press conference after the game, I said that football results didn't really matter, and I mentioned that Clive Clark had had a heart attack. And I had the evil thought. I'm glad he had it tonight, because it would deflect from our woeful performance. That was the world I was in. A couple of months later, I was asked about Clive's heart attack, and I said I was surprised they'd found a heart. It was a joke at a press conference, but on paper, without the context or the tone, it looked less like a joke. I sometimes forgot that I wasn't the only person with parents and children. It was after Clive had said something critical of me, something about me kicking chairs. The lads who were most critical of me were the lads I moved on or the ones who never played. When you've had a decent career as a player, the hard part about going to Liverpool or Manchester United when you're a manager, is almost having to accept that you're going to lose 1-0 or 2-0 and go, that's not bad. Isn't a hiding 5-6 or 7-0, which would have a big impact on your goal difference, especially if you're near the bottom of the table. It's hard accepting the thought. It could have been worse. I struggled with it. It felt a bit like I was robbing our own fans. We were taking on the big boys. But I don't like the term big boys. It's almost like you're beaten before you start. We were in the same league as them. I think I was quite good at looking at my players' strengths, not deficiencies. When we lost these games, I was disappointed, but I never lost a rag. A manager's biggest fear is feeling that his players aren't trying for him. If you have that doubt, that is where your pride is hurt. The beauty of Sunderland was I never felt that. You want your team to play like you. As much as I thought we needed more players and we needed improvement, I never looked at the Sunderland lads and thought they'd let me down. We lost 7-1 at Everton, but I knew they'd tried. It was naivety on my part. We were 3-1 down, never going to win the game, and I kept saying, keep going, we could get back into the game. I didn't enjoy going to Old Trafford, although I got a good reception from the United fans. But there was too much fuss. Craig Gordon played well. He was justifying his price tag. But Saha scored their goal from a set piece. Your manager's gone. I was particularly disappointed to see us conceding from a set piece. Almost as if it's okay to concede a goal from general play. The thinking is you should be organised to set things up. But the opposition can upset that by doing something quickly. And no matter how well organised you are, it's all about delivery. The opposition is putting the ball in the box, at pace, and they've players attacking it. At no other stage in the game do you have 7 or 8 players attacking the ball in the box. A huge proportion of goals are scored from set pieces. You should never concede from a set piece. You've almost been brainwashed into thinking it and saying it. After the game, we went to Alex Ferguson's office for a drink with his staff. But Ferguson never turned up. I thought that was out of order. He called me a few days later to apologise. He said he'd had to rush off after the game, and he'd waited a long time for me. I told him he should have had a drink with me, like he would have had with any other manager, and that he hadn't shown me or my staff proper respect. That was 3 league losses in a row. Wigan, Liverpool, United. You're starting to wonder where the next victory is going to come from. You begin to see why clubs can go 10 to 15 games without a win. When you're near the bottom, it all makes sense. But I think I stayed quite calm. We'd just been promoted, and I was still new to the job. I was still being given the benefit of the doubt, a bit of breathing space. Reading came to us, and we won 2-1. A big result. Kenwyn and Ross scored for us. We drew with Middlesbrough. It was a good draw because Liam Miller scored with the last kick of the game. We were still scoring late goals. The defeat by Blackburn, 2-1 at the Stadium of Light, was a hard one to take. I was down in the dumps after it. It was one of the games I thought we should have won. Arsenal away, we were 2-0 down after 10 minutes, and I was thinking it could end up being 7 or 8. But we came back to 2-2 before losing 3-2. We played Liverpool, United and Arsenal. We put up good fighting battles, but we still lost the games. Even thinking we'd played well felt a bit of a cop-out. We weren't invited for a drink with Arsene Wenger after the Arsenal game. Apparently he's not one for that tradition. But I went in anyway. I wanted to meet him. I look at some managers and think, the experience they have. It comes out of the pores. So he walked in. He was surprised but dead nice. Arsenal have that bit of class. West Ham was a big game for us. It was one we needed to win. The teams in the bottom half of the table, it's like a league inside a league. You had to get your points from these teams. Anything from the bigger teams was a bonus. Grant Ledbetter hit the bar. We'd have gone 2-1 up if he'd scored. Kenwyn had already scored for us, but we lost 3-1. One of their goals, Craig dived. The ball hit the post, came back, hit Craig and went in. A fine line between victory and defeat. That was another tough one to take. We drew with Fulham at home. Halford was sent off again. I was really warming to him now. Kenwyn scored again. That was late October. He scored again in December, then didn't score again till March. That was Kenwyn. It happens to strikers. We scored on average about a goal a game, so it was a battle every week. A striker in a struggling team needs to get you one or two goals a month, but if they're not delivering, you're in trouble. Manchester City away, and Stephen Ireland scored for them, a volley, then pulled his shorts down. He was wearing Superman underpants. The 1-0 defeats hurt because you think you're close to a point. You'd almost be happier losing 2-0. We'd slipped below the point-a-game target. We had 9 points from 12 matches, and we were stuck in the bottom three. We'd almost got used to it, but we hadn't gone into any sort of free fall. I worried, but I was confident we'd climb out of the bottom three. As a group, I think we felt we'd be all right. Self-belief, it's a great trait to have. Newcastle came to us in November. It was my first derby, and it was brilliant. The atmosphere. The relief that we weren't beaten. Our record against Newcastle wasn't great, but we should have won it. We were 1-0 up. Danny Higginbotham got us a goal, but they got one back. James Milner's cross went in off the far post. Chopra headed against the bar near the end of the game. You come away from a game like that thinking, we could have won it. And then we got hammered the following week. I wasn't a great one for motivational videos or talks, but before we got off the bus at Goodison Park, we showed the team a clip from Any Given Sunday, Al Pacino's speech at the end. He's an American football coach. His speech was about endurance, keeping at it. On this team, we fight for that inch. So we went out and lost 7-1. Nothing like it had happened to me before. Everton slaughtered us. David Moyes was very good after the match. There was no small talk. It was just me and him. I think he brought me to a private room. He must have known I'd be in a bad way. He was saying, stick at it. He showed real humanity towards me that day. The defeat hit me badly. I went home to Manchester. I hardly left the bed for 48 hours. You're advised to move on quickly, but I couldn't. I don't think I even showered for 2 or 3 days. I was punishing myself. I hadn't even had the cop on to take our loss, when we were three or four down. We kept going for it. Take your beat and don't make it even worse. But no, keep going. A part of me felt I'd let the players down. I took full responsibility.